I do not have my book, so I'm using the Pew Missal instead. Interesting story. So my mom and dad are on vacation. Currently, they've been on vacation for about the last month. Now that they're both retired, they've been enjoying some travels out west in the Jeep Wrangler, doing hiking and seeing some of the national parks, and wonderful. I'm quite jealous, truth be told, that I'm not with them. However, while they've been on vacation, they have had all the mail forwarded to my sister's address instead of their house. And so my October Magnificat is currently at my sister's house. I think I realized earlier this week, oh no, where's my book? I don't have it. So I don't know, this homily might fall apart now that I don't have it with me. I don't know what to do. The gospel that we have today continues an interesting part in Luke's story of the life of Jesus. There are several of the things that the evangelist Luke writes about that are not in the other gospels. And more of what we hear today is included in that, not the whole gospel passage, but at least the second half. And that has actually happened the last 2 weeks as well. The stories that we heard the last 2 weeks, both of the dishonest steward 2 weeks ago and last week of the story of the parable of Lazarus. Those only happen in Luke. You only hear those once every 3 years, on a Sunday at least. And today, part of today's gospel is also only in Luke. So more interesting things to kind of ponder on that we only get to hear every once in a while. Jesus, of course, on this point in Luke's gospel, as he has been for a while now, he's still on the journey. He's still going to Jerusalem. He's teaching and he's preaching along the way. And he knows, of course, as you've heard me say a lot in the past about Luke's gospel, this is the whole half of the gospel where Jesus is making the very last journey. So much of Luke's gospel is on the last journey of Jesus to Jerusalem. And this story, of course, is in the midst of that. So he's preaching and he's teaching and doing miracles as he goes to his final destination of Jerusalem, where he knows he's going to die. And these stories then give us a little bit of particular punch, because Jesus is, he knows that he has to speak with great conviction. And so his disciples, his apostles, of course, who are continuing to follow him, hearing all these stories, they're saying to Jesus, increase our faith. And the Lord says a couple things in succession that are a little bit interesting. He says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. And this part of that gospel is also repeated, I think, in the gospel of Matthew. What you heard in Matthew was, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you'd say to this mountain, be lifted and thrown into the sea, and it would obey you. Jesus is talking about faith in the same way that a child would talk about faith. As adults, we tend to have an adult faith. What does that mean? I think we tend to have a pretty human, based on our ordinary experience, a version of faith. Only a child would say something so crazy as, oh, I can just say to this tree, be uplifted and moved into the sea, and it would obey me, right? We think that's fantasy. That's something you might see in a movie. That's something you might dream about. It's certainly something that you would never pray in real life, because those things don't happen. As adults, this is sort of how we grow into our faith, if we're not careful. Much like I'm not careful and I've lost my place. I don't have my tabs. It's not my fault. What is it on? Thank you very much, Owen, 243, my man up in the choir loft, saving the day. Oh, is it your 243 or my 243? Oh, 245, got it. Started on, yep, okay, we're on it. Moving on. Jesus talks about the extraordinary The entirely supernatural reality of faith, which accomplishes things in the real world, in the here and now, that are totally fantastical, extremely impossible, that we learn to not go to that level because as we grow up and the experience that we have in our lives tells us this is what life is, this is what life is not, this is what I can expect, this is what I cannot expect, and it sort of transfers itself over into the relationship that we have with God. Here's what's kind of fascinating is Jesus continues right on, at least as Luke records it, and gives this sort of rhetorical question about a servant and his master. This part is Luke alone. We don't see this anywhere else except in Luke. Who among you would say to your servant who has just come in from plowing the field, "Oh, go ahead and take your time, kick your feet up, it's time for you to relax"? Would he not rather expect his servant to prepare him supper, to serve him, to do all that is necessary before he takes his own time? And then Jesus says, is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? He doesn't answer that question, but the implicit answer is, well, no. He wouldn't be grateful to his servant for the servant doing what was commanded of him, because it's already assumed that this is the thing that a servant should do. Think about it this way. There are things that all of us have in our relationships that are the basis of true relationship that we by definition know that we commit to, that we can expect from people. Wouldn't it be a strange thing for me to go up to my friend at the end of the day? Well, let's just do this. Let's just pretend for a second that I'm married and I go home to my wife at the end of the day. And I look at my wife and I say, "Susie, let me just tell you, I am so grateful that you didn't murder anybody today. Just thank you for not doing that. It just really has made my life so much easier. It's going to be good for our family." That would be a ridiculous thing to say to one's wife. It's assumed that there are certain things that I don't actually need to be grateful to you towards, because this is the nature of real relationship. Of course, real relationship would put someone in a position that it would be unthinkable for that person to do something so crazy and so sinful and so horrible as to end someone else's life innocently. There are certain things about that are in within the bounds of relationship that are an expectation if the relationship is real. And Jesus is going on, right, to say so much that if we are at a place that we are having to, for example, be grateful to things that we should be expecting of someone else reasonably, one of two things is true. Either I have mischaracterized the nature of that relationship, or that relationship is actually not very healthy at all. That relationship is in poor condition. All of us in our human lives have all kinds of relationships that demand certain kinds of behaviors, right? So the relationship that I have to my best friend is going to be expressed in a particular way, which is different than how I'm going to behave towards a complete stranger. And I may have a relationship with a husband or a wife, and the husband and the wife are going to have a certain kind of expression of that relationship, which is different in kind than the kind of expression they'll have towards their children. They love their wife, they love their husband, they love their spouse in a particular way. They love their children in a specific way. They don't act towards their spouse and towards their children identically, right? We have relationships to our parents, our grandparents, we have relationships to our coworkers, all of these different things around us. The sort of the bounds of those types of relationship will determine what we can reasonably expect of those people. And wouldn't it be strange for me to have one kind of relationship with someone, but to act as if it is a completely other kind of relationship? For example, if I went up to a complete stranger and began to tell that complete stranger secrets that I would only tell my best friend. Well, why would I do that? Why would anybody do that? That person would probably think I was crazy. And they would be like, "All right, this is really awkward, too much information. I'm walking this way now. Please never talk to me ever again." What if that's true of our relationship with God? And if so, what might God think about that? Jesus says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this tree, be uprooted and planted into the sea, and it would obey you. Jesus is talking, number one, about the extraordinary supernatural virtue of faith, which does fantastical, impossible things. It has that kind of power. But he's also talking about, what is then faith? What does it mean for us to be in relationship with God? For us to be in relationship with God, for us to have faith, faith means my knowledge of God and how God functions in my life. My knowledge of God and my knowledge of how God functions in my life. My knowledge of how I relate to God. And if I think that I relate to God in a different way than God thinks he relates to me, that's a problem, right? You see, Jesus says in so many words, there are certain expectations that we ought to be able to have, I with my people and my people with me. And just as a master and a servant has certain expectations of his servant, Jesus actually is talking about something much deeper. Of course, when he comes to the earth, he doesn't just say, the entire extent of my relationship with you is going to be, I'm the master and you're the servant, and the only thing you're going to do is pay, pray, and obey. But as Christians, is that how we act towards God? That the only thing that I have before the Lord is, am I not murdering people? Am I not stealing? Am I not telling all the secrets of my best? Okay, I've got all these things. I'm good. And God says, is that all that I am? Is that all this is? Jesus says, I come to make you friends of me, of mine. I choose you to be my friends. And when Jesus chooses us to be his friends, the nature of that relationship, my knowledge of that relationship, is totally renewed and transformed. You see, faith as a virtue is first and foremost for the sake of my own salvation. It's something that God gives to me to save me because he chooses me. But faith doesn't simply end there. Faith goes in extraordinary ways beyond that, even to describe such things as Jesus says in the gospel. The faith that is but the size of a mustard seed would command a mountain or a tree, right, to be moved, and it would happen in real life. Jesus is expanding this notion of faith that it's not simply a sort of a baseline definition of the relationship that puts me into a place of salvation. It actually expands with me to the point that it overflows. Jesus here is talking about faith as an overflow of the charism of the Holy Spirit. So when we are living in true friendship with God, as opposed to, hey, I'm just the servant and he's just the master, I'm just going to do what he tells me to do. And that's how it is. That's how I relate to God. But if God is my friend, the power of that faith opens up into a place that expands well beyond me. And I begin to live in that faith in such a way that my faith becomes a sign and a wonder to the whole world, so that it's like publicly knowable that God's supernatural love is real, and that supernatural love that is real, that flows so strongly even through the life of a singular human being, has the power to make impossible, fantastical things occur. Because that person is in true right relationship and in true knowledge of what faith is meant to do. Faith is not meant to simply make me a servant. Faith is meant to make me a friend. And when my relationship with God is a relationship of friendship, I am transformed to live in the world, right? Like in the same way that St. Paul was writing to Timothy about in the second reading, that you must stir into flame the gift of God you have received. This is a spirit, not of cowardness, but of power, of love, and of self-control, so that you may not be ashamed of your testimony. Testimony implies a public witness. that my faith is meant to become a public witness of supernatural things, even if that supernatural witness bears the hardships of this world, in the same faith that the prophet Habakkuk had, right? Write it down. This is how sure it is. You can put it in stone on the tablet, that there is a vision that I have for you, a prophetic call upon your life that will come to fruition. And if you live in faith and you know what faith is truly, you will be secure in that. And in justice you will live. St. Paul says it's rich. It is a rich kind of trust that is established between us and the Lord that we are to guard fiercely. So let us make a new examination of our hearts. Lord, in the practical expectation of my life, am I just your servant? Is that how I live? Or do I live as your friend? And if I am living as your friend, it will be seeable that such is the case. That the gift of my faith then doesn't simply become something salvific for me. It actually becomes a sign and a wonder. It actually begins to accomplish the impossible in the world around me. And ain't that what the world needs today? So let's accept the gift of the Lord's friendship.